Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 26, 2022, weekend edition. MPD arrests four Trinity administrators, by Mercedes Cordero and Stuart Doreen. Four Trinity School of Midland administrators were arrested Friday by Midland police after failing to report an alleged sexual assault of a student on campus. Those arrested were Shelby Hammer, the head of school, Todd Freeze, the middle school and upper school dean of students, Crystal Myers, the head of middle school, and Adrian Clifton, the assistant head for administration, director of admission. The four administrators have been charged with professional failure to make required child abuse report intentional, conceal a state felony. Bond for each person was set at $5,000. Reports showed they bonded out by early Friday evening. The arrests were related to alleged assaults that took place 4 months in 2019. According to an arrest affidavit, the victim was forensically interviewed by the Midland Children's Advocacy Center on February 22nd. Trinity was the second school in Midland to have administrators or officials arrested for failure to make required child abuse report intentional, conceal, in 9 days. Five officials from Midland Christian School were arrested on February 16th. The most recent event at Trinity was spurred on by stories that came out from the first event at MCS, Midland Police Chief Seth Herman said. During the interview at the Children's Advocacy Center this week, the victim stated that she was sexually assaulted on campus every other day for 4 months in 2019. She stated it started in September and ended in December, a week before Christmas break, when she finally broke down and told a friend. The affidavit states the victim's friend told the dean of students, identified as Freeze, who called the suspect into his office. The following day, Freeze spoke with the victim, who told him about the incident taking place on campus in front of school cameras. She stated she didn't give consent. According to the affidavit, legally she could not give consent to sexual contact as they were under the age of 14. The victim's mother told Midland detectives that in December 2019, she was reviewing the victim's text messages and became aware of inappropriate touching between the victim and another student. She also told police they contacted Freeze via email, but Freeze claimed he never received the email. The email was sent on December 12, 2019, 4 days before the last incident with the suspect. On December 17th, the victim's parents met with Freeze at Trinity School. During that meeting, when he told the parents he had interviewed the suspect, Freeze also said he would look for camera footage. He also stated it was a he-said-she-said situation, downplaying the incident. Following the holiday break, the parents met with Myers and Freeze on January 15, 2020. According to the affidavit, the victim's parents wanted answers about their investigation and to know why the suspect had not been removed from classes with their daughter. The parents were told that Hammer was not aware of the incident, but the parents had already contacted her about the assault and had set a meeting with her for January 20th about the policies in place for future students. On January 22nd, the victim's mother met with Hammer. Clifton was present and took notes. The parents decided to remove their daughter from school after the students returned to campus following the COVID shutdown. On September 18th, Hammer sent the parents a confidential waiver and release of all claims. The document stated that if they signed the agreement, they would allow the victim's parents to receive a portion of the tuition paid for the 2021 school year. If they did not sign, they would not receive that money in return, according to the affidavit. An excerpt of the confidential waiver and release of all claims stated, whereas the parents, collectively and individually, and the school desire to compromise, resolve, and settle fully and finally the dispute regarding the tuition obligation and any and all claims between or among them up to the date of this agreement, including any and all claims arising out of the incident, students enrollment in the school or the enrollment agreement, in order to avoid the time, expense, and inconvenience attendant upon litigation between them and without admission of liability or wrongdoing of any kind of anyone. The parents told MPD detectives they believed Trinity School wanted them to sign the agreement so they would not come after the school for the incident. The parents hired an attorney to assist them with the agreement, but decided they did not want to take away their daughter's right to talk about the assaults. Michael McWilliams, president of Trinity School's Board of Trustees, responded Friday in a statement. He said, "While we cannot provide specific details given the active investigation, we can share that to the best of our knowledge, the matters in question occurred years ago and were reported to Child Protective Services. Please continue. Please rest assured that we are continuing to cooperate with authorities." McWilliams also wrote that Tim Jones has been asked to serve as acting head of school. "We are grateful to him, administrators, and the faculty and staff who continue to hold the welfare and safety of your children as their highest priority and who stepped up today to care for your children and ensure that their learning was uninterrupted." McWilliams also wrote that Hammer wrote to you recently to share information about Trinity's child protection policies and protocols, including mandatory reporting. Mandatory reporting and student safety is taken very seriously at our school. Student coming forward brings out others. By Stuart Doreen. Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman said that the arrests of administrators last week at Midland Christian brought about an alleged victim that led to the arrests at Trinity School of Midland. Herman told the Reporter-Telegram that society sees more instances of people coming forward when there are crimes like abuse that take place, certainly more than 20 or 30 years ago when, as Herman said, things were kept hush-hush. It has incrementally improved that more people are willing to come forward. Without talking about the details of either case, Midland's top cop said Friday he thought one beget the other, and in that once the first arrests were reported, it made more likely that a person came forward at another campus. The most recent event was spurred on by stories that came from the first event. Herman said the law states administrators and school officials are mandated to report such instances. He said education institutions, whether public or private, are made aware of the state's family code that says teachers, administrators, and other school employees are classified as professional reporters by the state of Texas. The center refers to family code section, which states a professional may not delegate to or rely on another person to make the report. This family code section states a person having reasonable cause to believe that a child's physical or mental health or welfare has been adversely affected by abuse or neglect by any person shall immediately make a report. The Children's Advocacy Center suggests abuse or neglect can be reported online. As far as why employees of both schools were charged with state jail felonies, the code states an offense under subsection Class A-1 is a Class A misdemeanor, except that the offense is a state jail felony if it is shown on the trial of the offense that the actor intended to conceal the abuse or neglect. It should not be a surprise to anyone or directly involved in the running of the school or teaching. Herman made a point to say that there is no targeting of any group of schools, but that Midland Police Department conducts investigations as they arise. Both schools are private schools. Midland Christian School, according to its website, is rooted in Christian principles and beliefs along teachings founded in God's Word. Trinity calls itself a college preparatory community that provides a nurturing environment to enrich the mind, strengthen the body, enliven the soul, and inspire servant leadership, according to the mission on its website. Midland Christian appoints interim superintendent. The past president of the National Christian Schools Association has been named interim superintendent of Midland Christian School, effective immediately. Kelly Moore of Abilene was introduced to Midland Christian faculty and staff Friday afternoon by Board President Jason Stockstill, who called Moore exactly the right person for the job at this time. Moore was a superintendent, president, and principal for public and private schools in Abilene, Hawley, Keller, and Fort Worth before serving 4 years as president of NCSA. He earned a bachelor's and a master's degree as well as a superintendent certificate from Abilene Christian University. Stockdale said Kelly brings stability and he has sat in the superintendent's chair before. His leadership role at the national level gives him a unique understanding of Midland Christian and its mission. Earlier this month, 5 MCS administrators and employees were charged with failure to report with intent to conceal, neglect, or abuse. Moore told MCS employees, "This is God's school, and we will continue to focus on the Christian part of Midland Christian School." Stockstill also announced the appointment of Jerry Burleson, a teacher and assistant coach at MCS from 2004 to 2012, as interim head baseball coach. Burleson earned a degree in chemical engineering from Texas Tech and later worked for Huntsman Corporation as an engineer. At MCS, he taught algebra and chemistry and was assistant baseball and football coach before he left to pursue a career as an independent oil and gas operator. His sons Corey and Bryant played baseball at Midland Christian and went on to play at University of Nebraska and Texas Tech. Burleson said he would begin team workouts in the coming days. Christy Craddock, water is as important to RRC as oil and gas. Texas Railroad Commission has overseen the state's oil and gas and pipeline and mining operations for well over a century. But as Railroad Commissioner Christy Craddock reminded attendees at the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference's keynote dinner on Wednesday, the definition of oil and gas is broader than might be believed. "You are in the fluid industry," she said. "Water is fluid, too, and it's important to us." The agency is part of the Government Advisory Council of the Texas Produced Water Consortium at Texas Tech University, working to advance the reuse and management of produced water. The agency is also actively monitoring the seismic activity taking place around Midland, Odessa, and are taking action on water injection as it relates to seismicity. "The industry has worked well with us to figure out how to manage these issues," Craddock said. "We're getting good data, plus please share your data with us." She and her fellow commissioners, Wayne Christian and Jim Wright, are proud that we can address the environment while letting the industry continue to operate. Craddock was speaking as Russia was launching its invasion of Ukraine, raising concerns about energy supplies. Ukraine, which she said has been bullied by Russia over its energy needs, would like to get its natural gas from the U.S. And here the Biden administration has been asking the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries to increase production to lower U.S. energy costs. Texas's ability to meet state, U.S., and world demand for energy cannot be overstated. The importance of oil and gas in everyday life also cannot be overstated, noting that it is present not just in gasoline and plastics, but even the smartphones that are so much a part of life today. "This industry touches everything. It's so much more than filling up a gas tank. It affects what we wear, what we eat, how we travel. It also affects the bottom line. It affects the Texas budget." She said the state's Economic Stabilization Fund, known as the Rainy Day Fund, contains $11 billion, which came from the severance taxes paid by the oil and gas industry. Last year, the industry paid $15.8 billion in taxes and royalties, or about $43 million a day. That is money that goes to the states, schools, roads, and first responders. The industry is also driving the nation to become the world's largest exporter of liquefied natural gas by the end of the year. And all but one of the LNG export terminals will be located along the Texas Gulf Coast. But the industry faces headwinds from the federal government, citing potential federal regulations from the Endangered Species Act to Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act, and action from federal agencies from the Environmental Protection Agency to the Securities and Exchange Commission. U.S. policies are going in the wrong direction, and that's affecting our standing in the world. Ukraine tops the list, Craddock said. Europe, she continued, should be relying on us, not Russia and not OPEC. Looking ahead, Craddock told her audience, there has been an uptick in Permian Basin activity, and the region remains responsible for about two-thirds of the state's activity. I don't see that changing. You have good rock, smart people, and you can get production to market. Diamondback, Permian headed to 350 to 400 rigs. Consistently higher commodity prices continue to fuel a rise in the nation's drilling activity. Oil services firm Baker Hughes, which has tracked the rig count weekly since the 1940s, said Friday the rig count rose by 5 to 650 for the week. That's 248 more than the number of rigs at work last February. It's also the 8th consecutive weekly increase, record-setting 19th consecutive monthly increase, and the highest total since April 2020. Diamondback Energy said in its fourth quarter 2021 earnings call with analysts this week that the Permian Basin is probably on the way to 350 to 400 rigs by the end of the year, fueled by high commodity prices. Those rigs are operated by Permian-based operators, but similar growth on a go-forward basis will be by the majors, said Travis Stice, Diamondback's CEO. The number of rigs seeking crude inched up 2 rigs to 522. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 3 to 127. Texas added 4 rigs. New Mexico added 1. The Permian Basin added 3 rigs for 309 this week. Lee County, New Mexico gained 31. Martin County and Eddy County reported 29, Reeves County reported 25, and Loving County reported 17. Focusing on increases at the state level, Enverus Rig in Analix and Louisiana stands out with 14 rigs to a total of 60. Southwestern and Atheon are the most active operators in the state. Most of the state's 60 active rigs are running in the Haynesville-Bossier play. Frank Allen Bell passed away on February 21st. A memorial service and celebration of life will be held on March 5th, 2 p.m. at First Christian Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Katie Elizabeth McKenzie passed away on February 2nd in Austin. A graveside service for family and friends was held for Elizabeth at Rest Haven Cemetery in Midland on February 18th. Memorial donations can be made to the First Baptist Church in Midland. Martha Howerton Poss passed away on February 4th. Memorial services of the celebratory nature honoring Martha will be observed on the following dates. Ruidosa, Saturday, April 2nd, 2 p.m. Big Spring, Thursday, April 7th, 4 p.m. San Angelo, Friday, April 8th at 4 p.m. Midland, Saturday, April 9th at 2 p.m. All services will be at the First Christian Church in these locales. Patricia DeMurley Stewart passed away on February 19th. At this time, there are no services planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Sherry Lord Parker passed away on February 12th. A celebration of life will be held on March 26th, time and place pending. Vance Irvin Oliver passed away on February 22nd. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. February 27th at Nellie Pickling Welsh Funeral Home. A funeral service will take place at 2 p.m. Monday, February 28th at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Patsy Busey passed away on January 15th. Memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 19th at Nellie Pickling Welsh Funeral Home. Timoteo Enriquez Jr. passed away on Thursday, February 24th. A memorial service will be held Saturday, February 26th at 11 a.m. at Temple Baptist Church, Thomason Drive. Arrangements are under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home.
This is Jane, reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, February 26th. Landgraf skips meeting, defends reputation. State Representative Brooks Landgraf on Friday fired back following a news release by members of the GOP executive board condemning him for not attending a Thursday meeting of the board to, quote, explain himself. Landgraf was in Andrews, an area he still represents, during that meeting, but said the executive committee of the Ector County Republican Party is made up, quote, predominantly individuals who are actively supporting my opponent and or have been working for years to get me out of office by any means possible. They don't like me because they can't control me, end quote. News of the Thursday meeting led Landgraf supporters to gather at Republican headquarters on Jefferson Street to greet the executive board as they gathered to discuss allegations that Landgraf was involved in an extramarital affair. A handful of people held Landgraf campaign signs next to anti-Landgraf signs that said things like, quote, pay for play. After the meeting, Ector County GOP Chairwoman Tisha Crowe released a statement that said the executive board remains disturbed and frustrated. Landgraf has been unwilling to meet with them to discuss allegations about sexual improprieties. She also said every precinct chair in attendance was in favor of issuing a statement and that the vote on the statement was approved by a supermajority. Questions about how many people were part of the meeting and the names of those attending were not answered by press time. The GOP website for Ector County is also out of date and does not include an updated list of the executive board or precinct chairs. Prior to the meeting, Crowe said they'd invited Landgraf to meet with them last week, and when he failed to show up, they invited him to the Thursday night meeting. Depending upon his response, Crowe said they discussed everything from taking no action against him to demanding his resignation. Members of the committee on Friday also passed around a letter from State Representative Kyle Biederman calling for an investigation into the matter. Also, Crowe said, every precinct chair in attendance was in favor of issuing a statement. During a forum sponsored by the Ector County Republican Party, February 15th, Landgraf said that the truth would prevail and he would not be baited by his opponent, Casey Gray's claims of affairs. In an email Friday, Landgraf reiterated that stance. I stated plainly that I will not engage in mudslinging or the vile lies and political attacks that have launched against me and my family. It was unfortunate that the party chairwoman and many executive committee members did not attend the public forum, Landgraf said. As for Thursday's meeting, Landgraf said he wasn't informed of what was on the executive board's agenda, but regardless, he'd already committed to be in Andrews for a city council meeting. Landgraf still represents Andrews County until January 2023, when redistricting will put that area under another representative. No executive committee member is more important to me than any other constituent, Landgraf wrote. It doesn't matter where you stand in the political power structure. My job is to represent the people, not just a small group of local political insiders. Landgraf said he is a proud Republican and has a record as an effective conservative state representative. Early voting ended Friday. The primary election is Tuesday, and the winner of the GOP primary does not face a Democrat in November. This is Jane reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, February 26th. Death notices. In Midland, Patsy, Pat Busey, 91 of Midland, died on Saturday, January 15th in Midland. Memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on March 19th at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Please join the family as we celebrate Pat's life. Arrangements are by Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Donald Raymond Clevenger of Odessa, 83, died on Saturday, February the 19th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Good morning, friends. This is Julie reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, February 27th, 2022. Election Day is Tuesday in Texas. Early voting is over with, and 5,171 votes cast in the GOP primary and 1,015 in the Democratic primary in Ector County. Election Day is Tuesday, when the polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Don't forget to take an identification card with you. What type of identification card do you need? Any of these will do. A state driver's license issued by the Texas Department of Public Safety. A Texas election identification certificate issued by DPS. A Texas personal identification card issued by DPS. A Texas license to carry a handgun issued by DPS. U.S. military ID card with a personal photo. U.S. citizenship certificate with a personal photo. A U.S. passport. Election Day voting locations. The following locations will be open during Election Day only from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday. Chapel Hill Baptist Church, Fellowship Hall, 1820 East 52nd Street. Crossroads Fellowship, Room 1135, 6901 Texas, 191 Frontage. ECISD Facilities and Custodial Operations, Foyer, 2225 West 8th Street. Ector County Coliseum, west end of Southwest Hallway, 4201 Andrews Highway. Faith Fellowship Lutheran Church, Foyer, 1603 North Grandview Avenue. First Church of the Nazarene, Gymnasium, 2223 Lindale Drive. Gardendale Community Building, 4226 East Lake Spur, Gardendale. Demesian Church, Fellowship Hall, 8431 South Highway 385. Goldsmith Community Building, 301 Avenue H, Goldsmith. Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive. Lincoln Tower, Ballroom, 311 West 4th Street. Market Street, 4950 East 42nd Street. MCM Elegante Hotel, Hawaiian Ballroom, 5200 East University Boulevard. Murray Fly Elementary, 11688 West View Drive. Northside Senior Center, Multiple Purpose Room, 1225 North Adams Street. Odessa Christian Faith Center, 180 Youth Building, Sanctuary, 8828 Andrews Highway. Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clement Street. Sherwood Community Building, 4819 North Everglade Avenue. Slater Community Building, 1001 West 38th Street. St. Elizabeth Catholic Church, Gymnasium, 7601 North Grandview Avenue. The Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road. United Market, Albertsons, 1350 East 8th Street. United Market, Albertsons, 2751 North County Road West. VFW Bingo Hall, North Smoking Room, 208 East 63rd Street. Wilson's Corner, Dining Room, 16514 South U.S. Highway 385. Woodson Community Building, 1010 East Murphy Street. Have questions, call 432-498-4000. 4009 or visit tinyurl.com/4sc2xzck.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, February 28th. Board to consider OC Promise Program. The Odessa College Board of Trustees will meet at 5 p.m. today in the Zant Community Room of the Salisbury Campus Center, 200 West University Boulevard. Among the items the board will consider is approval of the Odessa College Promise Program. The program is aimed at first-time, full-time college students beginning in 2024. Quote, "It is a last dollar in scholarship opportunity for the class of 2024, so it is open to those graduating seniors that will be part of the class of 24, that will be first-time in college students beginning in summer or August 2024. It will cover tuition and fees." Vice President for Academic Partnerships Jonathan Fuentes said in an Odessa American article from early January. Vice President of Student Services Kim McKay said the program has been implemented nationwide and has improved first-time in college going rates and graduation rates. Some of the other items on the agenda are appointment of a vice chair, consider and approve changes to board policy, tuition and fee changes for 2022-23, an education report on the Odessa College Honors Program, an institutional effectiveness report, a Vision 2030 Plus update, the President's Report from President Gregory Williams on Seba Gultekin being appointed to serve on the Texas Transfer Advisory Committee Subcommittee on Sociology, Black History Month activities, Dream 2022 conference updates, Positive OC, and Alyssa Cornelius named Dean of the School of Health Science. The board will also have a special meeting at 4 p.m. Tuesday for training.
Obituaries. Irene Ann Kelleher, Atlanta, Georgia. Irene Ann Kelleher, beloved mother, sister, teacher, and friend, won her battle with ALS on January 2, 2021, with her daughters by her side. Irene was born to Annette and Nicola Agostillo on April 26, 1944, in Providence, Rhode Island. She is survived by her daughter, Shannon Kelleher, and son-in-law, Billy Whelan, daughter Megan Palmieri, and son-in-law, Gordon Palmieri, brother Joseph Agostinelli, James Verdi, Betty and Richard Riggiero. A family memorial and burial was held at St. Anne's Cemetery in Cranston, Rhode Island, where Irene was laid to rest with her parents. Memorials can be sent to donations in her name, fodac.org, or a charity of your choice. Noah Kai Russell, Odessa. Noah Kai Russell, 1 year, 5 months, and 9 days, of Odessa, Texas, died Saturday, February 19, 2022, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m. Tuesday, March 1, 2022. At Martinez Funeral Home outside Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Jeremiah Raymer is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Cruz L. Vasquez, Odessa. Cruz L. Vasquez, 71, of Odessa, Texas, died Wednesday, February 23, 2022, in Odessa, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 1, 2022, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery, Los Angeles Section. Father Carlos Rodriguez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. James Curtis Murphy, Jr., Odessa. James Curtis Murphy, Jr., 88, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 20, 2022, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Edavis Torres Vico Aguirre. On February 6 of 2022, Vico Torres Aguirre was called home to be with her Lord. Vico was born in Mexico in 1940 to Refugio and Gualamera Torres. Vico is survived and will be dearly missed by her sister Santos, brother Refugio and Antonio, brother-in-law Santiago, sister-in-law Angela, her four sons, two daughters, Elsa, Augustin, Olivia, Nolberto, Leo, Vicky, daughters-in-law Kay, Melissa, Sandra, and son-in-law Isaac, and 12 grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband, Nolberto, parents Refugio and Guillermina, sister Rosa, daughter-in-law Teresa, granddaughter Crystal Lee, and many other relatives and friends. A chapel service will be held on March 7, 2022 at Sunset Memorial Chapel, followed by a graveside service at Sunset Memorial Gardens, where Vico's ashes will be laid to rest with her beloved husband, Nolberto, in everlasting peace. Donald Raymond Clevenger, Odessa. Donald Raymond Clevenger, 83, of Odessa, Texas, went to be with the Lord and Savior on February 19, 2022, with his family by his side. He was preceded in death by his parents, Raymond and Flossie Clevenger, sister Phyllis Clevenger, brother Ferris D. Clevenger. Dad was an amazing man and very proud of his family and leaves behind nothing but beautiful memories. A memorial service will be held for him at the later date of Oreck, Missouri, at the Union Baptist Cemetery. Albert Orville Red Turner, Jr., San Angelo. Albert Orville Red Turner, Jr. passed away from this life and joined his beloved wife, Nadine, on February 22, 2022, at 6:55 a.m. in San Angelo, Texas. Affectionately known as Red because of his full, bright red hair in youth, Red was born in Albert Orville and Daisy Mae Turner in Bristow, Oklahoma, in 1932. Red was preceded in death by his beloved wife, Nadine, his parents and his in-laws, Daniel and Zelda Casbier, and one grandson, Michael Reynolds. He is survived by his three grandchildren. After 89 years of a full life, Red still had great stories to tell and a twinkle in his eye when he told them. He will be greatly missed. Funeral services will be at Harper Funeral Home on Tuesday, March 1st at 1 p.m., with graveside services to follow at Johnson's Lawn Haven Memorial Gardens, both in San Angelo. Family and friends may share condolences and sign the online registry book at www.harper-funeralhome.com. Evan Kyle Foy, Midland. Evan Kyle Foy, age 52, entered his heavenly home on February 19, 2022. He was born on November 20, 1969, in Odessa, Texas. Kyle grew up in Odessa and graduated from Permian High School in 1988. He loved and played baseball in his younger years. He attended Odessa College. Kyle was a Christian, loved his family, and adored his pets. He was a talented mechanic and very artistic. His years of employment were with Cox, Suddenlink, and Pioneer Resources. Survivors include his son, Marlon Foy, of Austin, mother and father, Mike and Sandra Foy, of Odessa, his sister, Michelle Ashby, and husband, Steve, of Georgetown, brother Blake Foy, of Midland, his niece, Mindy Whedon, and husband, Lucas, of Round Rock, his niece, Mercy Ashby, of Kyle, his niece, Michaela Foy, of Dallas, and one great-nephew, Tryon Whedon. We honor his wishes for no service. In Kyle's words, we have met again. We will meet again in heaven. In lieu of flowers, memorials will be made to Midland Humane Coalition. Eugenio Alvarez Jean Dominguez, San Antonio. Eugenio Alvarez Jean Dominguez, 41, of San Antonio, died Monday, February 21, 2022, in San Antonio. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Friday, March 4, 2022, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Rosary will be cited Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Pastor Mike Bartlett is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. San Juana Jamie Gomez, Midland. San Juana Jamie Gomez, 66, of Midland, died Saturday, February 19, 2022, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Monday, February 28, 2022, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Arrangements are at Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Lee Claiborne Gonzalez, Odessa. Lee Claiborne Gonzalez, 60, of Odessa, died Monday, February 14, 2022, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. Tuesday, March 1, 2022, at First United Methodist Church. Jody Wallum and Donnie Williams are officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 26, 2022. Few points. Questions for the candidates. Closing arguments. Terry Johnson, County Judge candidate. Promises kept sums up first 4 years. More work ahead. Before I was elected county judge in 2018, I spent months learning about the job. I toured every county facility, attended 16 months of commissioners' court meetings, pored over the previous two budgets that the county was running under, met as many department heads and elected officials as would see me. By attending the court meetings, I was able to either meet or at least know each county elected official and the role they played in the running of county government. Out of respect for the taxpayers of Midland County, I believe this is the least a candidate for county judge should do. Regrettably, my opponent has not attended one meeting of the commissioner's court. By spending so much time learning about the county, it became clear that what we were being told about the county just didn't square. They told us that the horseshoe was operating in the black. They told us it was making money. I didn't believe it was. You didn't either. And according to the recent article in the MRT, we were right. They told us that they were being fiscally responsible with your money. They weren't. Instead of building roads and bringing water to county residents, they built buildings to put their names on. They even told us there was no waste in county government when there absolutely was. Led by the county auditor and I, we uncovered more than $1 million that had been embezzled from the county during my predecessor's term. We've now recovered all the money and have brought many of those involved to justice. I ran on the promise that I'd clean up areas where we were failing the taxpayers of Midland County. I've kept that promise. I was able to prioritize the taxpayers' needs over legacy projects we didn't need. For example, my predecessor was good at building things that benefited government at the expense of what the everyday citizen taxpayer needed. So, in my first budget, I designated millions of dollars for road reconstruction and improvements without raising taxes. I promised to make roads better and safer. A promise kept. I witnessed the animosity the previous county judge had for our sheriff and his department. It is one thing to have personality differences, but that should never influence how we budget to keep our community safe. I promised to support our sheriff's office and to do all I could to work in harmony with our city counterparts. The relationship between the office of the county judge and the sheriff has not been this strong in the last 20 years. It really is as simple as that, a promise kept. For at least the last 20 years, bringing water to the residents of Midland County was not a priority, even though the water rights had been acquired. I initiated a meeting of the four agencies involved. We are closer than ever before, and I hope to continue the cooperation we have started as a community to bring potable water to those who reside or plan to develop outside the city limits. A promise kept. You have entrusted me for the past 3 years as your county judge. I have kept my nose clean and to the grindstone, just as I promised. We've accomplished much, but there is much more work to do. Many Midland leaders agree that I have kept those promises, including former mayors J.D. Faircloth, Ernest Angelo, Bobby Burns, Mike Cannon, Wes Perry, and Jerry Morales. They believe in the work I have done and want me to continue fighting the good fight for the Midland people. As a lifelong Midlander and business owner, my job is and has always been here in Midland, not in Austin or Washington, as with past county judges. I have no visions of grandeur on becoming the next governor or lobbyist. I just want to leave this hometown of mine a little better. We are a great community with awesome people living in a land of plenty. God has given us a resource locally that runs the world. Midland is great, and if you give me the privilege of serving as your county judge for another term, I'll continue working to keep Midland great. I'm asking for your vote on March 1 and make this commitment to you. Promises made, promises kept. Jonna Smoot, County Judge Candidate. Resume shows skills needed to lead county government. I am Jonna Smoot and am running to be your next Midland County Judge. I am a lifelong conservative with an unblemished record of voting Republican and supporting conservative candidates and causes. Servant leadership is the cornerstone from which I conduct my day-in, day-out activities. I grew up in a large family with three brothers and two sisters, and with my mom Helen and dad Paul, we pretty much made the Brady Bunch. In addition to working and volunteering, my mom was a whiz at being a homemaker, and my father, who had served in two branches of the military, spent 33 years serving as a policeman. We also camped often and lived by the Good Samaritan rule of leaving things better than we found them, which is still tantamount to how my family members live their days even today. I own my home in Northwest Midland and am doggy mom to Presto, the Midland Humane Coalition pup who had spent 2,302 days, or 6+ years, in rescue before coming to his forever home with me. Midland County is caring, resilient, smart, full of grace, capable, courteous, and chock full of the can-do, will-do attitude I was raised with. This is how I experience Midland and the many great things about it. I love being a Midlander, and my focused, meaningful, and measurable activities in Midland County reflect my ability to positively impact a community. I am vice president at a very well-respected, locally-owned community bank. I am regularly involved both at the startup, roll-up-your-sleeves, boots-on-the-ground level, as well as at the leadership level of many of Midland's nonprofits, where I provide beneficial and lasting community-oriented results. My professional background is in operations and finance, both in the aerospace industry and in financial compliance at one of the world's largest mutual fund companies. When elected, I will resign my banking position and focus on being your Midland County judge. I am endorsed by well over 100 of Midland's most respected individuals, including retired four-star General Tommy Franks, who helped lead our nation during the dark days of September 11, and by former mayor Wes Perry. My leadership background will allow me, when in office, to bring about a vision and plan for Midland County that will involve the voters, elected officials, other agencies, and the talented county employees so that we all move together toward a better future with planned outcomes that benefits Midland County for generations to come. I understand how important it is to be able to communicate and work with all levels of both the community and governmental entities, and can do so. As an arm of the state and as your next county judge, I understand that I need to always take the voters' direction for how I conduct myself as I will be your representative. I understand that Midland County is legislated by the state's constitution through Austin, not Washington, D.C., and I'm prepared to represent us in the manner which we deserve. I will listen to Midlanders and seek their input on how best to spend their money and improve Midland for future generations. As your next county judge, through my strong fiscal conservative leadership, I will lead Midland County by and through, putting the needs of the Midland community first, opposing non-taxpayer-supported tax increases, cutting wasteful spending, providing election voting integrity, security, so that your vote is counted and treated as important, unlike the 2019 school bond election debacle under the current regime. Back the blue by fully supporting and funding local law enforcement and other first responders. Secure future water rights, working with the city and other agencies. Keep vital road and infrastructure projects on track, on budget, and in the public eye. As the head of your emergency management, I will represent Midland during any crisis situation through coordinated agency efforts, including updated, regular information and communications, all while keeping our community's needs and safety concerns top of mind. I have conducted my campaign in the manner with which I regularly conduct myself and which Midland deserves, with dignity and integrity, and have not engaged in mudslinging or rumor-mongering, nor have my supporters. That type of low-minded behavior does not serve anyone well, least of all Midland as a community. I am a fiscal conservative and community leader who has a vision and plan to position Midland better than we found it. You can find more about me, some of the local nonprofits I have served, and a list of my published supporters at johnasmoot.com. As a servant leader, I humbly ask for your vote on March 1 for Midland County Judge. Because Midland matters. Root for Smoot. Robin Donnelly, Precinct 2 candidate. Active leadership makes difference for area residents. I am a less government fiscal conservative. As a fiscal conservative, small business owner, and property owner, I am committed to maintaining the lowest property tax rate in the state of Texas. In addition to maintaining the lowest tax rate, we also raised the homestead exemption for our senior citizens and veterans to combat increasing home values. We should not tax people out of their own homes. As a fiscal conservative, I have worked to address our county needs. When Patrol Lieutenant Richard Hain came to court with a plan to increase the presence of the sheriff's office in the county, the court readily approved the added personnel. Prioritizing the needs of the county while restraining the growth in personnel has kept the property tax low. Maintaining the quality of county employees rather than growing a bureaucracy is important to me, even when it means a delay in hiring additional personnel until a need is demonstrated. As one who is drawn to be the Midland County Commissioner, Precinct 2, because of having operational duties rather than a passive board role, I want to continue to be the first contact for the citizens rather than having them wade through a bureaucracy before their concerns can be addressed. As an alumnus of Leadership Midland and chair of the Transportation Committee of the Vision 2020 Plan, I have seen and participated in planning for the growth of the Midland community. It is my intention to further the transportation and infrastructure of Midland and Midland County in my next term. I believe that the private-public partnership for water development that I have worked on in Greenwood will bear fruit long before a governmental solution could be finalized. The road system in the county is expanding to meet the needs of both the city and the county. The work on roads and drainage being done now will impact the quality of life for the citizens for years to come. I am Robin Donnelly, and I am asking for your vote in the March 1 Republican primary. Jeff Sommers, Precinct 2 candidate. Time to change approach to solving problems in county. In closing, I want to say that there needs to be a change made in county government. let someone else have a shot at delivering results instead of continuing another 14 years of the same lackluster decision-making. I'll provide some history and a few current facts as to why I'm the right person for the job and the change that is needed. I was born and raised in Midland County's Precinct 2. I began my education at Greenwood and later graduated from Midland High School in 1988. After graduation, I was recruited to play football at the U.S. Air Force Academy and afterwards served this great country for 9+ years, stationed in Colorado, California, and Texas. My wife, Sharla, and I decided to plant roots back in Midland, where we started businesses focused on the oil and gas industry. Running our companies has heavily contributed to my understanding of the impact local government can have on the lives of business owners and the community as a whole. My love for West Texas is what has driven me to continue a life of service as a 12-year trustee for Greenwood ISD's school board, where Sharla and I raised our 3 children, Krista, Jake, and Caitlin. We have been married for 28 wonderful years and are members of First Presbyterian Church. This is my home. I am a lifelong Midland County resident, and I see and feel the issues facing our county like many of you. I feel the impact of being without reliable supplied water last year during the freeze. I feel the bumps when hitting potholes on my way to work, and I see the lack of resolve to tackle these problems. That's why I'm running for Midland County Commissioner. I am not a career politician. I'm a veteran who brings a business approach to solving problems and has a record of getting things done. The military taught me a lot. Most importantly, it taught me to work together with others to accomplish a difficult mission for a common good. This is a lesson that I have carried with me since my military days and employ in my day-to-day life. Whether it be the operations of my own businesses or the decisions that are made on Greenwood ISD School Board, when people come together, work hard, and put politics aside, it's amazing what we can accomplish. I'm ready to get to work on day one. I'm ready to lead, and I'm ready to act. I'm ready to get results and get dirt moving to fix the issues facing our county and precinct. I want this county to be the best place in Texas to live, work, and raise a family. I will deliver the conservative leadership that will continue to move the county forward in the years to come. The current commissioner has been in charge for 14 years, and the lack of results speaks for themselves. Things just aren't getting done. Let's give someone else a shot at delivering results. My resume and experience speak for themselves. It's time for a change in county government, and a vote for me will bring that much-needed change. I ask for your vote in the Republican primary for Midland County Commissioner, Precinct 2. Election Day is March 1. Vote Jeff Sommers for Midland County Commissioner, Precinct 2. And let's get some great things done.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.